I thought it would be a good time to check in on the midterm elections with our friend Henry Olson. He's a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and he's the editor of Flyover Country at unheard.com, also author of The Working Class Republican. Henry Olson, welcome back to the news.
Thanks for having me on.
Always good to talk to you. Let's just start with the kind of broad question, where are we today?
Well, you know, we are talking about a good Democratic night, and the argument is going to be whether it's going to be a great Democratic night or whether it will fall short of their lofty expectations, and that remains to be seen.
It seems to me that it just hinges on if they take the House or not. Right. If they take the House, it's a good night. If they don't take the House, it's a bad night. Is it that simple?
Well, certainly it'll be a bad night if they don't take the House. The question is, if they take the House, but it's only by a vote or two, and they lose four seats in the Senate, and they don't pick up, they only pick up a few more chip shot governor's races, it'll be a good night. But they're expecting much more. So that's why I think the real argument is between a good night and a great night. I mean, if they don't take the House, I don't think you want to be around a Democrat Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me, now we always have the caveat, none of us, we all see through a glass darkly. It sounds like you're with me in conventional wisdom that, if you have to bet, it's certainly you'd bet that Democrats do take the House.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem is the Republicans hold 25 seats that Mrs. Clinton carried. And these are the sorts of places that have been voting against Republicans up and down the ticket now for about 2 years. There's no evidence that that is slackening in any way. Now, if all the Democrats do is pick up most of those seats and a couple on the cusp, then they'll take the House, but not much more. And that's why I'm saying that, yes, the House, for them to retake it, would be a good seat, but a good night, but if they end up with 220 seats in the House and they lose three or four Senate seats, they will consider that a disappointment because they think it's going to be much more than that.
So I have this sense, and this might just be me, but I had a sense a week ago that the wind was at the back of Republicans all of a sudden. You know, call it the Kavanaugh effect, if you will, but that Republicans seem to be managing this rough year, and it should be, historically speaking, it should be a rough year for them, that Republicans were doing pretty well. You had this caravan, coming in from Mexico that was going to fire up the base. You had the Kavanaugh effect. But then you have the bombings or the attempted bombings. Then you have the shooting in Pittsburgh. I have a sense that the momentum, just anecdotally speaking, it feels like the momentum stopped for Republicans. And I'm seeing it out in places like Arizona, where it seemed like Sinema, the Democrat running for Senate, that Sinema had been on the defensive the whole time for a couple weeks. And now all of a sudden that has gone away. Is it just me, or did something change in the last week?
I don't think very much changed in the last week that decisively. I've taken a look at the Arizona polls, and virtually all of the movement back and forth are sampling effects. In the exit polls in 2012 and 2016, the polls showed that the electorate was either 74 or 75% white. One poll that had Sinema up by 3 says it'll be 70% white. One that has her up by 6 says it'll be 65% white. And another one that has her up says she'll win Phoenix with 57% of the vote, when in fact no Democrat has even carried Phoenix, not the city, but the county, in a contested race for over 20 years. So I look at those and I say, this is sample error. Now, it's not to say Sinema won't win, but when I can easily look at 3 polls and find 3 things that are implausible in their substructure, I can say that I haven't seen anything at all change from what I think will be a narrow win one way or the other to a wave that is moving in Sinema's favor.
It's so interesting. I've been critical of the media, even though I'm part of the media. And I feel like the media should be self-examining ourselves right now and say, look, half the country doesn't trust us. How can we fix that? Similarly, I think the polling industry should be doing this sort of reflection. I mean, you know, the polling, you know, we can talk all day about how, well, the polls really weren't that bad in 2016, but there's certainly a perception that the polling let us down. And you would think that the polling industry would try to correct this and not make these types of errors. And I'm seeing them happen again and again. There seems to be no emphasis or, you know, toward, you know, correcting these mistakes. I mean, if Henry Olson is able to spot this, how come the professional pollster isn't picking up on these problems?
Well, you have to take a look at how they weight their polls. You know, one of the things that we've moved from is that it used to be people were pretty open about answering polls. So the theory of statistics that undergirds polls, which is that if you can randomly sample a small number of people, you can predict the behavior of a larger number of people, was accurate. Well, and now we know that there's systematic response because people just don't want to answer polls anymore. And so you overcome that by waiting, but then according to different criteria. But then the question is, what are your criteria? And then the question also is, what do you think is likely to happen as far as enthusiasm? These are all guesses, you know, educated guesses to be sure, but they're guesses. And the more professional and I think also the more political the pollster, the better they are. But not every public poll has somebody who takes a whole, who knows enough to get it right. And so you have things and you look and you say, well, gee, I wonder why they did it that way.
Yeah. So I have a column coming out. I'll scoop myself. I have a column coming out about how, you know, if Donald Trump loses the House, you're going to have all these media stories saying, you know, this is horrible for Donald Trump. It's a harbinger of things to come. Actually, though, a lot of time, I mean, you know, by my count, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama all had horrible first midterms and went on to win re-election. You could even argue that losing a midterm helps a president win re-election. I guess your thoughts on that and how you think that might be spun if Democrats do have a big wave.
Well, I mean, let's be frank. I know how it'll be spun, whether it has a big wave or not, because we know where the media leans. And I expect it'll be spun in a way that will advance the Democratic Party, because that's the natural default background of most people on the broadcast news. But, you know, let's take a look at Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had a 1982 midterm that was, not terribly successful. That on the same Senate map that we have right now, Republicans lost 26 out of 192 House seats, and they gained, however, Senate seats. They stayed even. They gained one when you compare it to the last election, but there were party switchers. And, you know, 2 years later, Ronald Reagan won in a historic landslide, and that began to change the country and the world. So what happens is less important that it happened and more important as to how the person responds to it and how the party that won interprets it. In 1982 and in 2010, the party that won basically said, we don't have to change. Everybody loves us. And they got their handed to them in the next election. And in 1994, Bill Clinton said, you know, if I run as the way I've governed, I'm not coming back in 1996. And he famously moved to the center. So we have November 7th is the start of an entirely new political era.
Indeed. Well, look, I know you're, this is kind of your Super Bowl, and I know you're tired, and I know, I think you're going to be,
I kind of think of it as, you know, I'm kind of like Mel Kiper, and I'm preparing for draft day.
And I know you're going to be at an undisclosed location on the left coast, where the time zone will favor you calling these elections on Tuesday,
Correct.
Which I think is very smart. My question is, we're playing along at home. We're going to be following you on Twitter, as you're, by the way, on election night in 2016, as I was following you on Twitter before any of the polls had closed, you were saying Trump might pull this off, people. And I think you got into a fight. People were arguing with you and actually mad at you, as I
Oh,
recall.
yeah.
Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah. People, basically thought I was either the biggest idiot that mankind has ever created, or the most corrupt, dishonest hack that mankind had ever created. Yeah,
So following that
I just
interview,
happened to be right.
so follow him on election night, or follow him now, but on election night at Henry Olson EPPC. But as we do that, what are a few of the races? Maybe it's Senate or House, I don't know. What are a handful of seats that we should watch as bellwether races here?
Sure. Well, I'll walk you through the first 2 hours. 6 o'clock Eastern. Instead of watching the kids, you're letting them binge on ice cream and video games while you're watching Indiana and Kentucky come in. And there you want to look at the Indiana Senate race and the Kentucky 6 House race. If the Republicans win both, that tilts in a good favor. If they lose both, it's looking good for the Democrats. Then we get to 7 o'clock, and polls close in Virginia and Florida and Georgia. There, what you want to do is look at obviously the Florida Senate race. You want to look at Virginia 2, 5, and 7, and you want to look at the Georgia governor's race in Georgia 6 and 7. Basically, same thing. These are races that are on the cusp. If Republicans are sweeping them, that's a good night for Republicans. If Democrats are sweeping them, it's going to be a great night for Democrats. And then we get to 7:30, and it's Ohio, West Virginia, and North Carolina. And in Ohio, you've got a governor's race that's on the knife's edge. You've got in North Carolina 9, and North Carolina 13. Both are Republican seats where the incumbent's running poorly. Same thing. If one party sweeps the other, it'll be a harbinger of things to come. And if we've gotten through those three time zones, and it's 8 o'clock, and one party's clearly winning one way or the other, I can tell you right now, at that point, the direction the election's going to go in, because the rest of the country's not going to suddenly reverse course.
All right, that's a good place for us to stop it. And everybody, follow him on Twitter at Henry Olson EPPC. Thank you for checking in with us. It's going to be a fascinating night, and I think this really will help us follow the midterms, and not be don't be fooled again. So, Henry Olson, thanks for coming back on the news.
Well, thanks. In Elmo Saves Christmas, Elmo wished that every day were Christmas. I wish every day were Election
If you like this podcast, rate and review it on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Matt K. Lewis. As always, the intro/outro music is performed by Matt's old band, the Backyard Apples. And stay tuned to another episode of Matt Lewis and the News.